We got another news bomb for you. We'll take care of some business here, and then we'll get back to the fun stuff on our way into the evening. Listen, if you depend on Social Security to pay rent or pay for medicine or make groceries, you might want to start thinking of ways you're going to get creative about saving next year, because the Social Security Agency is going to start 2026 in pretty bad shape.
Internal administration documents reviewed by the Washington Post show the agency's shrinking workforce has struggled to respond to 6 million pending cases in its processing centers and 12 million transactions in its field offices. The Trump administration fired 7,000 employees earlier this year. The Post says inexperienced staff have been left to handle the aftermath, delaying basic services to millions of Social Security recipients.
That is bad news. But the more important thing to understand here is that this is not just Social Security collapsing on its own. It's the opposite. It's actually being actively, quietly pulled apart. Staffing cuts, like the man said, 7,000 jobs, office closures. There's a Social Security office in the building, three stores below me. And there was a non-zero chance that that office closed. It's still open, thank God, but all the people that are coming in and out of here all day to deal with their Social Security issues might have had to go somewhere else. Lots of other people all across the country have not had the privilege of their Social Security office remaining open. So this means longer waits. It means unanswered phones, unanswered questions, people being pushed into online systems, websites, apps that don't work very well for seniors sometimes or disabled people. Now, the checks are still going out, thank God, but everything around that is fraying, and it's not an accident. Social Security is very popular, it's very efficient, and it is paid for by us, which makes it politically dangerous to attack head on. So instead of attacking it head on, they have to just make it miserable for us to deal with. I'll give you an example. My fiance, Julia, calls this weaponized incompetence. Again, this is just an example, but if Julia asks me to load the dishwasher and I purposefully load the dishwasher like an idiot with the glasses and the mugs facing up and the plates stacked horizontally on top of one another, and instead of detergent, I put blue plate mayonnaise in the soap dispenser, maybe she won't ask me to load the dishwasher again. Weaponized incompetence. That's what's happening here. That's what Republicans have been doing to Social Security and other agencies for my entire lifetime. They let service degrade. They let frustration mount. Then they point to the mess and they say, see, the government can't handle this. We should privatize it. That is not failure. That is a deliberate management strategy. And Trump and Elon Musk and the doggy boys found a way to take it to the next level. And the consequences are serious. This isn't just about convenience. This is about working people's rent money. This is about seniors' medication, disability income, survivor benefits. When the customer service system breaks, it's not just an annoyance. It's a serious problem for Social Security recipients. They fall behind, they panic, they add pressure on their loved ones. They get hurt, maybe they lose their home. Social Security did not suddenly break on its own. The point of these cuts that the Trump administration and DOGE made is to run Social Security in a way that makes it look broken. You run it badly, you make everyone there miserable, and then you pretend that their misery is evidence that it doesn't deserve to exist in the first place. And this is, historically speaking, the most reliable program in the federal government. And if they cannot even answer the phone, that is not mismanagement. That is someone standing there saying, see, I told you I couldn't load the dishwasher. One of the finest performing arts centers in the country is suddenly radioactive to performing artists, and everyone knows why.
The board of Washington, D.C.'s Kennedy Center voted less than 2 weeks ago to rename it, and workers added Trump's name the very next day. Not long after came the cancellations, a Christmas Eve jazz concert, and now a jazz New Year's Eve featuring the supergroup The Cookers. They didn't mention the renaming, but emphasized their commitment to music that bridges divisions. Separately, sax player Billy Harper says he would never even consider performing in a venue bearing a name that he says represents overt racism and deliberate destruction of African American music and culture. Kennedy Center President Richard Grinnell tells AP the last-minute cancellations show those artists were always unwilling to perform for everyone. Ben Thomas, Washington.
Richard Grinnell should take every seat and shut the hell up. Of all the stupid things happening in American politics right now, and the field is extremely competitive, this might be the stupidest. His argument, and the argument from the White House, is that renaming the Kennedy Center after Trump somehow depoliticized it. And the artists who are walking away are just radicals, which only works if you pretend that politics entered this situation when the musicians left, not when the board, at Trump's request, slapped his name on the building. May I remind you that the Kennedy Center is literally JFK's memorial? The same way that we have the Lincoln Memorial, the Jefferson Memorial, this is the Kennedy Memorial, the Kennedy Center. So if you think that it's okay for Donald Trump to stick his name on someone else's memorial, I'm sure that you're going to take it sitting down when the city renames Jackson Square to LaToya Cantrell Andrew Jackson Square. It's the same thing. It's so unbelievably stupid. And to be clear about something else, these people that are not showing up for these gigs, these people that are canceling, that is not some radical political act. That is the most basic freedom that they have. No one is owed anyone else's labor. They didn't just shut the place down. They're not throwing eggs at the wall. They just said, nah, I don't want to do this gig. And they took their work somewhere else. That is not activism. That is a business decision for them. Healthy cultural institutions do not need threats to keep artists on stage and wanting to perform there and booking concerts. You cannot save the Kennedy Center from some nebulous threat by watching the schedule empty out and the subscriber base collapse. The gaslighting is just off the chain with these people. And all of this is just to soothe the ego of the biggest malignant narcissist to ever sit in the Oval Office. What a clown show this is, my God. Every day is a new adventure for the Department of Justice, being run by a bunch of people that you'd expect to hear spent their life savings talking to a 1-800 psychic that they saw on television at 2 in the morning.
A newly unsealed order in the criminal case against Kilmar Abrego Garcia reveals that high-level Justice Department officials pushed for his indictment, calling it a top priority only after he was mistakenly deported and then ordered returned to the U.S. Abrego Garcia is seeking to have the case dismissed on the grounds that the prosecution is vindictive, a way for President Trump's administration to punish him for the embarrassment of his mistaken deportation. He's pleaded not guilty in federal court in Tennessee to charges of human smuggling. I'm Marcela Sanchez.
So, yeah, listen, this is the part where I try not to say, I told you so, but the court documents are being extremely rude about that. I told you so. This newly unsealed order shows that the Department of Justice only decided Kilmar Abrego Garcia was a top priority after they accidentally deported him and after he won that court battle. The alleged crime that they charged him with was almost 3 years old. It sat there, did nothing. No one cared. It's collecting dust. And then suddenly, boom, it's urgent. The minute the administration looks like they don't know what they're doing, spoiler alert, they don't. And again, I don't love doing this. I'm trying to say this gently because it's on the record. I wrote about this back on April 16th of this year on this station's website on WWL.com. I wrote a blog post called The Conservative Case for Bringing Kilmar Abrego Garcia back to the U.S. It is still published there. You can still go find it. And I predicted this in that blog post. I literally said that the Department of Justice's next move would be trying to justify deporting him after the fact instead of just admitting that they did that and then bringing him home. And I predicted that not because I'm clairvoyant, like I'm a precog or I got a magical crystal ball, but because I understand that this is how the president, the president's companies, the president's administration, the president's family do things. When someone shows you who they are, believe them. They have been doing this for 10 years. You don't undo your mistake. You don't admit that you screwed up. You just decide that the person you hurt must have deserved it somehow. Retroactive criminalization. Very efficient. Very American, apparently. Finally, out in Minnesota, the administration says that all this is about protecting children from fraud. But the record on who Trump wants to see punished for fraud is worth revisiting.
In an online post, the CDC's acting director, Jim O'Neill, states blatant fraud appears to be rampant in Minnesota, and the Trump administration has now frozen child care funds to the state. The move follows years of investigation that began with a $300 million scheme at the nonprofit Feeding Our Future, for which 57 defendants have been convicted. Prosecutors said the organization was at the center of the country's largest COVID-19-related fraud scam, in which defendants exploited a state-run, federally funded program intended to provide food for children. Earlier this month, the federal prosecutor alleged half or more of the roughly $18 billion in federal funds that supported 14 programs in Minnesota may have been stolen. I'm Ben Thomas.
Yeah, so we talked about this yesterday. I won't go on too long about it, but we need a quick reset here. Yeah, the fraud in Minnesota is real. There have been real fraud cases, big ones. People have already gone to prison for them. More people will go to prison, and I'm glad about that. I'm glad this is all coming to light. There's no argument from there. But what I'm not glad about is this move today where HHS, the Trump administration, says they're freezing child care money for 19,000 kids based on a viral video. And then they're just promising to figure it out later. It's too difficult for them to go after specific fraudsters, so they just shut off all the money. The same way it's too difficult to decide which January 6 rioters was just a little grandma who got lost in the Capitol building and which one went in there with a gun trying to kill Nancy Pelosi. So just pardon them all. It's just too much work. Yeah, just pardon them all. It's the same thing. So they just shut off all the funding to the entire state of Minnesota and the families be damned. They can eat the consequences. The White House says it's suddenly very serious about fraud because Tim Walz was mean to them last year. But if the fraudster, the person committing the fraud, is politically useful, hey, it's pardon season. Let's talk about some fraud cases that ended in convictions for people that Trump then offered a full pardon to. Here's a reminder of people that have already been pardoned by Trump for either being charged with or convicted of fraud. Steve Bannon, we know that guy. You may recall he was charged with defrauding people who sent money into the company called We Build the Wall. When it became apparent we were not going to build the wall, Steve Bannon and a couple of his buddies got together and said, well, give us your money and we'll make sure the wall gets built. That was fraud. That operation raised about $25 million from public donors. They did not do anything with that. Charged with fraud, Trump pardoned him before the case even went to trial. Bernard Kerik, you might remember that guy, pled guilty to tax fraud and lying to investigators while he was serving as New York City's police commissioner, crimes involving about $1 million. Trump gave him a full pardon. Charles Kushner, tax evasion, illegal campaign contributions totaling $1.2 million, full pardon. Paul Manafort, tax fraud, financial crimes involving tens of millions of dollars, including unpaid taxes owed to the United States government. Trump gave him a full pardon. There are many many more of these. These are just the names that we would recognize. Fraud is bad. People who do fraud should go to jail. But this is not a moral crusade against fraud. This is the weaponization of government, of the system of justice. When fraud involves politically connected people and millions of dollars, they get pardoned, the crime gets erased. When fraud happens and it is a convenient excuse, it embarrasses Democrats, it embarrasses black people, then they freeze child care money for toddlers and they call that accountability. The Trump administration does not oppose fraud. They oppose unauthorized fraud. So maybe Donald Trump will pardon the woman who spearheaded the entire fraud scheme in Minnesota and is already in prison. Maybe he'll pardon her. After all, she's white. That does it for the News Bomb today. If you want to react to anything you just heard, I got plenty of time to talk to you. The way to do it is the Oakenheart Jewelers Talking Text Line, 504-260-1870. At 325, we'll talk more about the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau. Until then, I'm not locked in here with you. You're locked in here with me. I'm Ian Hoke, sitting in for Scoot on WWL. Be right back.